is Unladylike. I'm Kristen. And this week I learned that Comstockery, the title of this episode, you might have noticed, Comstockery is a word. I didn't make it up. It means strict censorship of materials considered obscene. Comstockery is also capitalized since it is a reference to a mutton-chopped man named Anthony Comstock. But more importantly, for our purposes today, he is the namesake of an 1873 anti-obscenity law that is having something of a revival.
That law that was referred to was actually enacted, the Comstock Act, in 1873. 1873, when they treated pneumonia with bloodletting, when the Pony Express existed, and which I note is 10 years before they even did the Yellowstone prequel. I yield the floor.
The Comstock Act, an 1873 law that criminalizes the shipping of any materials used in an abortion, including abortion pills.
I can't even really believe that we're talking about this. This bill, this old law, the Comstock Act, has been relegated to the dustbin of history for over 100 years.
They want to use another law from the 1800s. It's called the Comstock Act, to ban medication across all 50 states, no matter if it's currently legal or not.
There's been kind of like a bit of tension. Do we want to talk about the Comstock law? If we talk about it, are people going to notice? But it's like, it is here. It is not a dead letter law. It's being referenced at the Supreme Court.
We might not want to talk about Comstock, but we need to talk about Comstock, which is why I reached out to legal friend of the pod and returning guest, Natalie Birnbaum. She's a healthcare regulatory attorney and policy expert who specializes in reproductive health rights and justice-related advocacy. Natalie's also the founder of the legal and policy firm Repro Solutions PC and is co-chair of the New York City Bar Association's Sex and Law Committee. Last summer, she came on Unladylike to talk about how the abortion legal landscape had changed over the first year post-Roe. Now, with all this Comstockery hanging in the balance, I reached out to Natalie again to help us make sense of this 1873 law coming back to haunt us and to what extent it could be a federal abortion ban just waiting to happen. This time last year, we have Texas federal judge old Matthew Kaczmarek issuing that preliminary ruling to invalidate the FDA's approval of mifepristone. That decision is now before the Supreme Court. They recently heard oral arguments in the case. Just briefly, do you have any sense at this point of how the court is likely to rule in terms of mifepristone?
Yeah, so based on the oral argument that we heard earlier in March, it seems clear that the Supreme Court will rule on standing. And we talked about this last year, but essentially in order to bring a case, the plaintiff in the case needs to have standing to get in the door. And that means there needs to be an injury in fact, causation and redressability, meaning like it's not enough to show that you're injured, but there actually needs to be a solution for you based off of the decision. And the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine, the plaintiffs are doctors, associations, and organizations that oppose abortion, and none of them actually prescribe mifepristone. So the issue of standing in the case caught the attention not only of the Supreme Court justices, but also of many pharmaceutical companies, which rely on the FDA's decisions to regulate drugs. So every drug has side effects. So if these plaintiffs and these doctors, who again do not prescribe mifepristone, can bring a case based off of the side effects that they may or may not have to deal with if somebody walks in the door of their ER after taking mifepristone, that's going to have a huge impact on the pharmaceutical industry and the medical industry in our country at large. So it feels clear. I feel confident enough to say that, you know, the case will be thrown out, at least at the Supreme Court level, on the standing issue and not actually get to the merits, meaning it won't be determined on whether or not the FDA's approval process was, as Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine would like to say, not thorough enough, which is just absolutely not true. What would happen then is then the Supreme Court would say, okay, you know, direct the trial court, Judge Kaczmarek's court, to dismiss the case. However, there are three intervening states that may be found to have an injury. It feels, again, very attenuated, very stretched out, but there is an option where even if these plaintiffs are found not to have standing, that the trial court may then bring this case back in with those three intervening states as the plaintiffs.
Listening to the lines of questioning, especially from Justices Alito and Thomas, like, that it's almost like a fishing expedition of like, okay, well, y'all might not have standing, but
totally,
who could have standing that the next time around we can, you know?
Yeah, absolutely that. I mean, you could really tell where all of the justices came out based off of their questioning, and they definitely were trying to do a setup. And, you know, in the same way, turning towards Comstock a bit, Justice Alito tries to like bring in, and I quote, he says, talking about Comstock, "This was a prominent provision. It's not some obscure subsection of a complicated, obscure law. They knew about it. Everybody in the field knew about it."
They knew about it. Everybody in this field knew about it. Shouldn't they have at least addressed it? You have answers to the arguments that are made on the other side. Shouldn't the FDA have at least said we've considered those and provide some kind of an explanation?
And ladies, just to clarify for a moment why Comstock is even coming up in the mifepristone case, because the pills are sent through the mail, whether that's drug manufacturers mailing them to pharmacies or pills being mailed directly to people via telemedicine. And as Natalie will explain exactly what that has to do with Comstock in a moment, Justices Thomas and Alito in March, during the oral arguments, were invoking Comstock, this archaic 1873 line of federal code that has not been enforced since the 1930s, to basically argue that medication abortion is illegal because mail, M-A-I-L, not M-A-L-E. Although, let's be honest, they both apply.
Even if this case is dismissed on standing, what they're doing, and, you know, Thomas said something similar.
So how do you respond to an argument that mailing your product and advertising it would violate the Comstock Act?
What they're doing is bringing Comstock to the forefront and making it, you know, seem legitimate in the same way that they're doing that fishing expedition. You know, everybody's being very intentional in their speech so that, you know, again, if this case is dismissed or sent back to the trial court and, you know, directed to be dismissed based off the standing issue, that there is a setup in the future.
The weather's getting warmer, so it's time to say goodbye to jackets and sweaters, and hello to shorts and tees. Now, I wanted to update my wardrobe for the long haul without spending a fortune, and that's why there's Quince. Now, I have some timeless pieces that are going to keep me looking effortlessly chic year after year, summer after summer, like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from just $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes on the savings to us. Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. We love that. And you know what else I love? My new summer uniform. Yeah, if you catch me out this summer or probably next summer or summer after that, I'm going to be in my terracotta vintage wash tencel camp shirt and short matching set. This camp shirt is a button-down cut that I have been searching high and low for months now. The shorts, perfect length, so comfortable, and yet the whole look still elevated. So if you need to get warm weather ready too, you gotta head to Quince. Go to quince.com/unladylike and get yourself free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/unladylike to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/unladylike. And ladies, I have been using my Oak Essentials Moisture Rich Balm every day, morning and night, for about a month or so now, and I can't get enough of it. When Oak Essentials says this balm will make you never want to wear makeup again, I can co-sign that. I really can at this point. Now, you can buy the Moisture Rich Balm on its own or as a part of one of Oak Essentials' best-selling bundles for a simple start-to-finish skincare routine. Yes, simple skincare routine. Not to mention, it makes the perfect gift for any skincare lover in your life or anyone who could just use a little everyday pampering. The routine product bundle includes the Moisture Rich Balm, Ritual Oil, Cleansing Balm, Balancing Mist, and Restorative Mask. So treat yourself or someone else this season. Unladylike listeners can get 15% off plus a free organic honey-based restorative mask with your first order when you use code UNLADYLIKE15 at checkout. That's 15% off plus a gift with your first order at OAKESSENTILS.com, promo code UNLADYLIKE15. Go ahead and treat yourself. From luxurious skincare to meaningful self-care, you deserve some Oak Essentials. So, Natalie, what is the Comstock Act?
Okay, the Comstock Act. So we're going to have to just roll back the clocks for a second. And I want to just imagine, I personally, big Gilded Age fan, so that's where we're at. The Comstock Act is a 1873 anti-obscenity law named after Anthony Comstock. And I'll get to him momentarily. We'll just stick to the law to start because he's a fascinating character. So while the Comstock Act is considered like a dead letter or a zombie law because it is not enforced for nearly 100 years, it is being brought back on the scene. And the law essentially outlaws mailing every obscene, lewd, lascivious, indecent, filthy, or vile article, matter, thing, device, or substance. And specifically, it outlaws mailing every article or thing designed, adapted, or intended for producing an abortion. And although the reach of the Comstock Act has been severely limited since its enactment again in the 1800s, most of the original language remains in the United States Code, specifically regarding non-mailable matter. And that is where abortion is really specifically named as, you know, every article or thing designed, adapted, or intended for producing an abortion or for any indecent or immoral use. And it also speaks to advertising as well. So it essentially bans anything related to an abortion or advertising for an abortion in the mail from being sent. And it applies to all U.S. postal carriers. And there's an argument that it also applies to private carriers of mail as well.
And ladies, it's also worth knowing that while Congress has failed to amend the anti-abortion provision in the Comstock Act, It did remove Comstock restrictions on mailing contraception and birth control way back in the 70s. That was in the wake of the Supreme Court decision in Griswold v. Connecticut. And in that ruling, the justices found that interfering with married people's use of birth control is unconstitutional. So as birth control and contraception became legal, Congress did go back and update Comstock.
So we wouldn't have to worry about, at least in this instance as it stands, impacting contraception. But as we know, a part of this extreme far right crusade also will impact contraception. The law's abortion provision specifically was rendered moot by Roe versus Wade because abortion was legal. And so the act itself was never changed, but it was just invalid. It was like you could not enforce it because abortion was legal in this country and you could not restrict it.
Is that typical for these kinds of zombie laws where they don't actively change the language or repeal the law altogether?
Yes, that is common, and we see it all the time at the state level. And, you know, there are, for example, like in New York a few years ago, the Reproductive Health Act repealed some arcane abortion laws that were still actually on the books, like reporting requirements, even though abortion is legal in New York and has been since the 1970s. But still, there's like these things that are considered unenforceable and they're lingering. And that's what we saw happen when the Dobbs decision came down. So when we're talking about trigger bans, what that is it's a law that was still on the books, that it was their state law criminalizing abortion that was rendered unenforceable because of a federal law. So the same thing happens at the federal level. If there are areas where a law is rendered moot by a Supreme Court decision, it doesn't always get repealed, which of course is dangerous. And similarly, like where we could have been more proactive, let's say, to getting these state trigger bans off of the books during the period where Roe was valid and enforceable, we could have been doing the same thing at the federal level. There were efforts to repeal the abortion provisions in Comstock within the past few decades, but none of them were successful and none of them really took off.
Side note, unladies, I have to share this example that I found from 1996, this is Colorado Representative Barbara Schroeder speaking on the floor of the House.
Now, I think when you look at this thing that I'm sure most people started out thinking was a real anachronism from the 19th century, the fact that it is still on the books in the 20th century, and then to think that this Congress put it up on the internet for the 21st century is really, really sad.
And have you heard of Project 2025?
Heritage Foundation?
Yes, yes, exactly. Project 2025 is an initiative led by the Heritage Foundation and dozens of conservative groups. And, you know, it essentially is like a blueprint for Trump's next term. So within that, there's a roadmap that calls for the campaign to enforce the criminal prohibitions of the Comstock Act. And they don't mention the Comstock Act by name, but they mentioned, you know, the number of the code that it is, and against the providers and distributors of the abortion pill. So, you know, Jonathan Mitchell, who's like the conservative lawyer behind the Texas abortion ban, in February, just full on told the New York Times, like, we don't need a federal ban when we have Comstock on the books. So the failure to repeal the abortion provisions of Comstock, even when it was unenforceable, is now having its threats and potentially its consequences. And there are movements by Democrats, such as Representative Cori Bush, made a statement that they want to introduce legislation repealing Comstock. Same thing with Representative Tina Smith. She wrote an op-ed in the New York Times discussing legislation that would repeal Comstock. And again, it's tricky because it needs to be worded in a specific way. legislators need to get on board, vote in a way that actually gets us across the finish table. And it's not so simple at this point in time, but you know, we should definitely be putting pressure on our Democratic representatives to get a repeal of Comstock.
Let's say very real possibility, Trump wins the election. And
yeah.
He's like, okay, sure, Heritage Foundation, let's do this. What would enforcement look like? Like, is it something that he would direct the Department of Justice to do, or like the U.S. Postmaster General? Like,
yeah.
What does that even mean?
Yeah, it's a great question. What would enforcement look like? We'll have to find out the answer to it. But essentially, what it would mean is that anything related to abortion, including the pills, but not limited to the pills, could be at risk, meaning anything related to abortion. We're not just talking about like direct-to-patient pill mailing, which I think is sometimes where we get caught up, and which, by the way, you know, medication abortion makes up over 63% of abortion care in the country now. And telehealth for medication abortion makes up 16%, which, you know, given the fact that direct patient telehealth for medication abortion has only been made available since the pandemic, is a very high number and also a very exciting number, because medication abortion and telehealth for medication abortion is safe and effective and oftentimes the most patient-centered approach. So that's all awesome. And like, if Comstock is enforced, would no longer be an option, would no longer be available. But even, you know, more broadly than that, how are you going to mail the pills to from the manufacturer to the pharmacy? How are you going to get the pills from the pharmacy to the clinician or the provider's office to a hospital's office? And how do you regulate that? Because these, the pills and like surgical instruments used for abortions, like for DNEs, same thing. How do you regulate that? Because these are the same pills, tools, medical devices, instruments that are used for miscarriage management, that are used for emergency care. So how are you, as whoever the enforcer is, you know, making that discernment of, well, this pill is going to go to a person who's having an abortion that they're electing to have versus this person, you know, their life is in danger. Like, what, the Postmaster General is going to make that decision? Like, it's unclear. It's unclear. But I hope we're not in a position where we have to find out the answer to how that is enforced. And you know, enforcement will definitely look a lot different than it did back in the 1800s.
How did Anthony Comstock enforce it? I'm imagining him on a horse, like looking for vice.
Great. Let's go there, because Anthony Comstock is a wild character. He was like a former dry goods salesman, and he like got on the scene in New York in the 1800s, and he was just really keen on bringing back moral purity. Like, he was on an anti-vice crusade. This guy was thought that abortion and like anything related to contraception were things that would evoke impurity and would increase like sex and drugs and moral impurity and all these things. So like, by mentioning abortion and contraception, like that's what would happen. So that's why those needed to be banned. Not because abortion itself was the issue, but because moral impurity was the issue. So he's like hanging out in New York and starts to just tip off law enforcement as to like where obscene things were happening, and then eventually becomes like, gets elected to be like a postmaster general or something like that in New York. And he's just trying to like eliminate pornography. I first became aware of him because he arrested Victoria Woodhull, who was the first woman to run for president. And she and her sister had the first female-owned brokerage firm on Broad Street in Wall Street area in New York. And she created this magazine to increase awareness around free love, which at that time meant a woman's right to divorce. And she like posted this salacious article about this like high up, like Catholic priest having this affair, and Anthony Comstock arrested her and put her in jail. And even more relevant, okay, like to the question of how did Comstock enforce things? Well, there was also Madame Ristel, the abortionist of Fifth Avenue in the Gilded Age. She's a bit of a controversial figure, but like really bringing it full circle back to the 1800s, like Madame Ristel created herbs and pills for women to self-manage their abortions. And people would go to her, you know, like very high society people would go to her to get abortion care in the 1800s. And Comstock had like a raging, like lifelong mission to get Madame Ristell. And eventually Madame Ristell, she had this very like high society husband that was kind of protecting her. Eventually he dies and Comstock poses as a husband of a wife who like needs an abortion, but he's lying and it's the 1800s. So like, you can't just like vet people in the same way. And so he shows up to Madame Ristell's door and is like, gotcha. And she freaks out. And actually she, on the day of her sentencing or something like that, she was found dead in her bathtub, like basically at the hands of Comstock. So it's just wild, the continuation of this person's legacy and like this concept of like, does anything really change, or we're just like at different points of depth on a spiral.
Would an enforced Comstock override the kind of state referendums that we've been seeing, the state constitutional amendments protecting abortion rights?
Yeah. So if Comstock is enforced, it is enforced in all 50 states. So even in states with progressive protections for abortion, Comstock, like I wouldn't be able hypothetically to, I'm sitting in Brooklyn right now, I wouldn't be able to get the pill in Brooklyn, right? Like the way that the far right conservative movement is looking at Comstock, they're looking at it as a backdoor way to ban abortion throughout the entire country by using the mail as a vehicle to do that. And we'll see what happens, but at least in like the direct to patient way, it feels like the most vulnerable area. So like we do see states like New York preparing for understanding that like the state laws and state constitutions need to be so much stronger than they are. It's no longer enough for a state like New York or California or whatever like liberal state you're sitting in to be like, oh yeah, like abortion is legal here, it's fine. There's now a real need for states to be looking at all of the little holes. So like that's everything from what are your state, you know, parity and reimbursement rates for abortion providers, and are they high enough that make it possible for, you know, abortion providers to have economically viable jobs in your state, like so we can increase access to abortion. A lot of states have, including New York, until recently, had laws on the books that required you to report an abortion to your state. So even in these most really liberal states, going back to dead laws that are coming back. So it's like a moment and a reckoning in time where it's like, okay, if you are living in a liberal state, it is time to demand that your legislature and your government like proves it and doubles down and like really does everything in the state's jurisdiction to ensure that abortion is protected. And on its face, because you think you have access, you may not realize that more steps are needed. But again, to your point, if Comstock is enforced in the way that Project 2025 and the Heritage Foundation want to see it enforced, it can result in a national abortion ban in every state, regardless of, you know, state politics and perspectives and protections.
I heard from an unladylike listener who also wanted to know whether an enforced Comstock could impact or restrict access to sex toys.
So again, like, sure, because of the way Comstock has been minimized over the years, at this point, no. But Comstock in its original form, Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It would restrict access to sex toys and pornography and Viagra and all of those things that the people that are writing, that are like going for the enforcement of Comstock would hate to have limited. I mean, like, what are they going to do without their Viagra? How can they survive? No, as it stands right now, really, it's the abortion provision that we are concerned about.
Well, that's a relief because, you know, if it could possibly impact contraception and then we have abortion access. Yeah, we're going to need vibrators. We got to do something.
I mean, listen, we got to keep the female pleasure happening. And if this means that, you know, we got to take care of things just on our own, then so be it.
There has been reporting recently that Planned Parenthood and Center for Reproductive Rights have discouraged Democrats from introducing legislation, at least right now, to repeal Comstock. And I was just curious if you had any insight on that.
Yeah, I mean, what I can say is, like anything else, there's a lot of strategy that goes into what is the most effective way of going about things. So if national pro-abortion organizations are hedging or concerned, it is only in an abundance of caution to make sure that things are executed in a way that is the most protective. On the opposite side, on like the far right conservative side, you know, it is very clear to them that public opinion is not with them on their abortion stance, and they want to win the election. So if they're coming out publicly being so extreme, being like, oh yeah, like Comstock is going to be a national abortion ban. And again, like some of them are saying that, but I would imagine they want to tone that down as much as possible now. So they look, you know, even keeled. And actually in some states, Republicans are actually now introducing like fake ballot initiatives that purport to protect abortion because they want to look like, oh no, we're cool. We're not trying to kill women, right? Like we're not trying to do that. Like we like some abortion is cool. So there's like, they're introducing language to counter the actual ballot initiatives that appear to be abortion protections, but actually like the protections they're putting in totally moot and useless. But they want to go for this public persona of being more middle road. So that way abortion is not the defining issue of the election. And we don't need to look further as to like what's going to happen to the United States than just like looking at a state like Louisiana, which has the highest carceral population in the country. There are now forced C-sections instead of abortions because providers are so terrified, and women and pregnant people are criminalized for their pregnancy outcomes. So it's like, we don't need to look far to imagine what the future could look like.
Now they're worried about seeming extreme. I'm sorry.
Right? I mean, yeah, I think now they're worried about it because like people are starting to wake up. Right. Like people are starting to see the impact of what the abortion ban is. And it's like, oh, so this is what happens when you give a zygote more rights than a person? Oh, yeah, no, that's not a great look. We don't like that.
So last time we talked, you did have a very optimistic kind of framework on reproductive law in the sense of it being an opportunity to really build up stronger protections in the wake of the Dobbs decision. Is it still an exciting time?
Exciting, you know, exciting can mean so many things. There is a lot of energy, which one can define as exciting. But, you know, there are hopeful things in which we're seeing and some of which we touched upon. So we see all of these ballot initiatives popping up, not just in states that we have had and anticipate the continuation of abortion access, but also in states that have been red and conservative, and their legislatures are so red and roadblocking any access to abortion care, such as Missouri. You know, there's a real movement for a ballot initiative and to get the choice out there to the people. And there will be abortion ballot initiatives in states including Florida, also in Massachusetts and New York, which has the ERA. There may also be ballot initiatives in Nevada, Nebraska, Montana, Colorado, Arkansas, Arizona, like all of these states with really red, or at least some of them with red conservative legislators. The options now bring bought to the people. And that is exciting. That is inspiring. And again, like having this conversation come into the light and come into the public is really encouraging in a lot of ways, because it also brings the progressive states to a moment where they have to, so to say, like put their money where their mouth is and be like, okay, you're a progressive state, so what are you actually doing? And increasing protections, increasing access to just ensuring that the right is there. So that part is exciting. And what else is also exciting is to see how innovation has really been able to continue to occur and proliferate, like telehealth for medication, abortion care, direct-to-patient services, and really putting the power actually back in the patient or the user, the woman, the pregnant person's hands, and creating many more resources for a person to either self-manage their abortion on their own by empowering with education and hotlines like the M&A hotline. And yeah, just really like putting the power back in the individual's hand also feels exciting.
Thank you so much to Natalie Birnbaum. You can learn more about her work at reprosolutions.co. You can also follow her on LinkedIn. I also have some resource recommendations from Natalie to share if you want to learn more about access, where you live. Plan C Pills has information on every single state. And if you need financial help getting abortion pills, Plan C also has info on that, of which abortion funds might be able to supplement the cost depending on where you live. If you are looking for an abortion fund to donate to, consider donating in banned states. The Yellowhammer Fund is a great place to start. You could also donate to ReproCare, which arranges and covers interstate travel for people seeking abortions. And finally, if you have legal questions, If, When, How is the organization to go to. If, When, How. And I'll be sure to link all of these in the episode description. One more thing about Comstock. I do think it's ripe for an obscene redefining. Go Comstock yourself. No, that's not quite right. What about, watch out for that dude. He's a total Comstock. I don't know. Let's workshop it in the Unladies Room. That is the Patreon. While you're there, you can listen to boatloads of ad-free bonus episodes. Maybe you want to listen to an episode about women and divorce. Body hair, 'tis the season. It's getting hot out here. Stay-at-home girlfriends, cave diving, all sorts of bonus treats. Patreon.com/unladylikemedia. Or search Unladylike Media on the Patreon app, because Unladylike is an Unladylike Media production. Executive produced, written, hosted, and edited by me, Kristen Conger. Engineering is by Amita Ganatra. Our music is by Flamingo Shadow, Amit May Cohen, and Sarah Tudson. Until next week. Thank you so much for coming back on Talking Comstock and still having some sense of humor in this very dark time.
Yeah, we got it, right? Like, oh, also, there are so many funny organizations that are just like putting out so many repro memes and things like that. And that also helps keep me alive.